This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired like 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Brian Lewis. And before we get to Brian, here's a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. You can go there. You can see some stories that I've written, some stories that some of the guests have written. You can see links to their social media. You can see links to our social media, which is, of course, Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Get those numbers up, will you, folks? I would appreciate it. Let's get those people on board, all of you. Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Follow us there. We are we have a Facebook page at Travel Tales Podcast on Facebook. We are on all the big streaming outlets. So if you listen to us on one of those platforms, be it Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever it is, give us a good rating, please, because that helps more people find the show and boosts our presence there. And that's a cool thing for you to do. I'd appreciate that. Do you want to write me? Do you want to ask me some questions? Maybe it's about travel. Maybe it's about show business and comedy. Maybe it's just to tell me I'm awesome. You can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. All right, let's talk about Brian Lewis. His people reached out to me. Who is he? He's a guy who owns a successful travel business. And we like successful travel businesses. Tenon Tours, T-E-N-O-N, that's his company. And since 2007... they've been specializing in European travel, bespoke travel, as it were. They set up personalized trips and tours all around Europe. Started out pretty much focusing on Ireland. Then the tours started creeping over into the UK and then the mainland Europe. And sure enough, now they're all over Europe. And I've talked to a lot of travel professionals on here, if you listen to the show. And look, there was a big fear in their industry that the internet would put them out of business. Just like they said, television was going to put movies out of business. Well, it didn't happen. Me personally, I like planning my travel. I like investigating all this stuff. I like doing research on sites, hotels, you name it. But a lot of people, A, hate it, and B, just don't have the time. And C, maybe they haven't been around that much and really don't know much about getting around these places. And they want some expert advice. And that's where people like Brian come in. Whatever kind of tour you want, they can set it up. They can point you in the right direction. They can take you to places that are kind of off the beaten path that you wouldn't find on your own. And this is where the knowledge comes in. And it's because they're good at it, that's why his business is doing well. So go to tenontours.com, that's T-E-N-O-N tours.com, and you can get the scoop and you can follow them at Tenon Tours on all the socials. You can hear all about the company right from the horse's mouth from its founder, Brian Lewis, right here on the Travel Tales podcast. Here's my chat with Brian Lewis. First of all, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. I know, you know, it's cold there in Boston. You probably have to go out and shovel or do something. And I'm keeping you from doing it. Wrapping
every
your
day
pipes
lately,
up.
Mike. Every day. It has been a snowy winter and we've been spoiled. So it's probably time that we were due for it.
Well, good thing for you. You're in the travel business. So you can go places. You can go to warm places if you want. I know you specialize in Europe. And to get it out of the way, we should tell people what you do, the name of your company, and what you specialize in.
Sure. Yeah. The company I founded in 2007 is called Tenon Tours. And it is started out as a operator to Ireland only. And we started doing things a little bit differently. Rather than the big bus tour, the completely independent tour, we did a more independent, personalized itinerary. And since 2007, we have expanded throughout Europe, and we still pride ourselves on that highly personalized itinerary design for folks, mostly individuals, couples, and small groups that want that high-end experience without being, moved within the crowds of people. So it's highly personalized, tailor-made, bespoke, whatever word you want to use to describe what we do. But that's in a nutshell, we are 19 destinations now across Europe, and we just launched Slovenia as our 19th yesterday, which is cool.
All right. Well, then when you say high end, that can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. One person's high end is another person's, budget accommodation. So when you say high end, let's say for a week, let's just pick. Okay. Since Ireland is how it all started, why don't we, when we talk about Ireland for a week, a couple, is there a budget range that you usually work in, or do you tell people you can handle all ranges?
We can handle all ranges, but it's really important to establish a budget first and foremost, because exactly what you said is different for everybody, right? So I always said that the word luxury was a dirty word, because it can mean so many different things. And, is luxury white glove service 5-star, or is it something that's just, it meets your expectations or goes beyond, depending on what your expectations actually are. So for us, as long as it is custom, it's personalized, and we work from the ground up, we do a budget. We would typically suggest about $700 per person per day, all in for the land accommodation. That's your accommodations, your private transfers, your tours, attractions, activities, and everything that goes with it. So for a 7-night trip to Ireland for you and your wife would be, around $12,000, just on average, but it varies so much, Mike, because it's just, how are you getting around? Are you driving yourself? Is it a private driver? Are you taking trains? Are you staying in castles? Are you staying in 4-star city center hotels? What's the pace of your travel? Are you packing your itinerary tight with tours and attractions, or are you relaxed? So it can vary. And we take a lot of time with folks to just make sure that we understand the way they travel and their expectations, and we meet those, so we can do a wide range.
Well, we still have to get ourselves there, right? That doesn't include the travel to the destination, right?
That's correct. Yeah, no, we stopped doing air when COVID hit. We learned our lesson with airfare, and I think everybody has, just because there's no need for us in providing airfare anymore. Everybody can browse itineraries and schedules and get the best for them. We do work with our partner for those who do want a little bit more help.
Okay. Now, when you started this, what was the year again that you started this?
Founded in 2007, launched January 2008, and off to the races.
Okay. So 2007. Then you got to, your timing was right there as the economic collapse happened. So there's that. Yeah. Congratulations for surviving not only that, but then eventually you survived COVID, as a travel business, which is never easy. And I've seen a lot of victims of COVID, and people never came back. Why Ireland from the start? Is your family from there? Did you know it very well? Did you just pick Ireland because it's compact and small and you knew it well? Why Ireland?
A little bit of all of it and a little bit of none of it. So the interesting thing about Ireland, and even the timing, 2007, which looking back on it, it was the worst time ever to start an international tour company when the economic crisis was upon us, right? In hindsight, it was the greatest time to launch something new because we made all of our mistakes when the demand was low. So yeah. I think it was one of the best unintentional decisions that we made. With Ireland, it started because I had a good friend who was going over in the summers to be a counselor for a high school study abroad program. And so we worked at the previous company together. And when I left that company and I was considering what I was going to do next, I thought of him. Ireland was exactly, there was that low barrier of entry because it was a quick flight. It's the westernmost country, shortest flight to get to other than, say, Iceland.
From Boston especially. I mean, it's an easy one.
From Boston, New York, it's 5 hours there and unfortunately 7 hours back. Yeah. But it's English speaking. It's on the Euro. it's Ireland, right? So you can't go wrong with Ireland in terms of the hospitality, the culture, the people, the dance, just the whole culture is just inviting.
And it's popular if you're selling it to Americans. So, you know, they're the number one visitors of that place, I would think, right?
Millions of people, yeah. And when you asked about the heritage, so many people identify or have, you know, Irish blood, especially in the Boston area. It's incredible how many people. It's funny when everybody in the Boston area, you can see all their Irish tattoos, right? I remember there was a guy, we were moving out of our house, and he had a neck tattoo that just said Ireland from, it crossed half of his neck from front to back. And I was thinking, I'm like, can you imagine somebody who overseas who really identified with America and tattooed America across their neck? You just wouldn't see it. But in Boston, anything goes.
Yeah, I know. It's like going around Ireland. I've been there a couple times or a few times. And I know that, you know, once you say, if you say you're from either Boston, New York, or Philly, or Chicago there, everybody's got like, oh, I got a, my cousin lives there, or somebody lives there. Mm-hmm. And then in Poland, if you say you're from Chicago, everybody knew somebody in Chicago, in Poland.
It's funny. So that was,
my son lives there. Okay. Yeah, sure. Makes sense. Totally. So did you, you started this, I said, you said you picked a tough time to start it. But maybe the only worst time might have been September 10th, 2001.
Yeah.
You were the second worst time to start.
That's true.
Yeah. March of 2020 might have been another.
2020. Rabbit. Yeah. Which is funny because we actually had just invested a lot into the company in January of 2020, including a big new office down in Delaware. We renovated this old house. We sunk a ton of money into it. We outfitted it for this 25 people and went through this whole strategy session in a 10-year plan in January 2020.
Oh man.
Hired a bunch of people, ramped up, had our whole vision on paper, and because we were doing well. We had increased our business every year for at that time 13 years. And we were right there. And then COVID hit. So yeah, we've been through the ringer and very, very fortunate and proud to survive that, especially.
So you set that up in Delaware, but not, so you're not in Boston or based, or you're still in Boston based, or do you have multiple locations?
So we started the company in Boston. I've always been in Boston. We had an office here for the first few years. And interestingly enough, our managing director, our top salesperson, and another staff person that we hired early on were all from Delaware. And they all came from our previous companies that I continued a friendship with after I left there. So naturally, we were looking at it and we said, well, you know, how do we get more people to sell like our top salesperson? We said, let's put more people around her. So we opened a small office in Delaware and we retained the one in Boston. Well, eventually Delaware became our headquarters. And we had, I think, 17 people in Delaware and 3 in Boston. The problem with where we were in Delaware in the Rehoboth Beach, Lewis area is it's not easy to get to. I don't know if you've ever been to Delaware.
I've been just barely passing through.
Yeah. So where we were was 2 hours from the nearest airport. So for me to get down there from Boston, it was, you know, an 8-hour drive, or you'd fly into Philly, still have to rent a car and drive 2 hours. You could take a train into Wilmington. So anyway, it was inconvenient, but it served as our headquarters for about 13 years. And now, you know, since COVID, we've gone fully remote. We do have an office here in north of Boston still, and we have one in Killarney, Ireland that we're also letting go very shortly now. So I've conceded, Mike. I don't love the full remote structure and culture. I love the office culture, but I get it. And it did open the world to talent, I think, or us to the world's talent. So that's pretty cool that we can recruit anywhere now.
So you have agents working for you, not only here in the US, but also in Europe as well?
Yeah, we have a team. Our service team is in operations team is in Killarney, in Ireland. Now again, they can kind of there in Cork and Waterford. Mm-hmm. We have somebody in London, and then in the U.S. now we've got people in Colorado, New York, West Virginia, Massachusetts here. So it's kind of cool. You know, I love being at one point we crossed 9 time zones and had people in I think 11 different states and 3 countries, and that kind of felt cool, felt global. But it's also it presents challenges in communication when you're trying to schedule meetings and overlap full team meetings. So we've got it down now. I think we're all in the same, we're used to it. We're communicating by, you know, Google Meet or Zoom or whatever we want to do, but it's just something that we've never expected to do, going from a full office to 1-inch squares on a screen.
Yeah. But if you're booking now, you're still only basically focused in Europe, the trips you book, right? I mean, you're still, you haven't branched off into like, hey, we're booking Thailand now or something like that. Or was it better? Was it always in your mind to just kind of stay, you know, it's hard to do everything all at once. You know, just you'd rather be an expert in one. I always say that about Rick Steves, you know, one thing about him. He was smart in that he focused solely on Europe, you know, for his travel books and shows and everything like that, because he's like, you know, I can't be everywhere and I can't be an expert on everything. It's a big world. So, I mean, was your plan to stay in Europe, or do you eventually want to, I don't know, do African tours and things like that?
No, we don't. Okay. We want to stay in Europe. And it's funny because you summed it up. I mean, for me, it was... this is very intentional in being able to be an expert instead of a jack of all trades, master of none, right? So when we started in Ireland, you know, I didn't know where we were going to take the business initially, but I had it in my head at the time. We were doing these different types of trips, right? We were doing a kind of a hybrid point-to-point travel that wasn't the fully independent, wasn't fully hosted or guided. And I thought this is a cool concept and a great way to travel. Is a little bit biased because it's the way I want to travel. But we had intentions in doing like Australia, New Zealand. We actually started a different brand doing Mexico the same way. But as we progressed, and I think when it came to a head just before COVID, we had that burning question, who do we want to be? We were having a little bit of an identity crisis. Did we want to be everything to everybody? We were reselling tours of other companies. And if somebody wanted a bus tour, we would find one for them. Did we want to entertain going to other countries and continents? And when COVID hit, we had the time to do two things. One, figure out our identity. And we engaged with a marketing company, and it was going to be an easy choice to save the money and not do it. But I felt strongly about this because I knew we were going to get through it. I didn't know it, but so we went through this branding exercise, and we said, who do we want to be? And we really decided to be the best of what we do and not relying on anybody else. And we wanted to be specialists. So slowly and strategically, we started to expand. And at that time, we were in Ireland, the UK, Italy, and Iceland. So we had 5 destinations in Europe in 2020. COVID hits, and we had the opportunity to expand across Europe while, again, the demand was low. So actually, it was at zero, not even low. It was at zero. Yeah. So we doubled down on the efforts. We hired somebody, a product manager, who had experience in other destinations across Europe. And we successfully launched 12 new destinations over the next 2 years. So, and then we wanted to stop. There's a couple countries, a few gaps that we want to close, and then we're done. We're sticking with Europe.
Okay. Yeah, they say you were talking about going to Slovenia, which has been on my list for a while. I've been to Croatia like 5 times, but I've been all around Slovenia, but I haven't been. So it seems like something that's doable in a week. You know, it's not that big of a country. And I've seen the highlights. Is that one of your fastest growing areas, or what is it? What's your biggest area? Everybody knows Italy. Everybody knows Ireland and UK.
Yeah.
But I mean, what's starting to pop off in your world?
So right now, the biggest growth we've seen in destinations up in Scandinavia. So we launched Scandinavia again in 2022, maybe. So we've been at it for a few years. Scandinavia is really hot right now. Norway, I mean, they're all Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark. There is beautiful. It's slower. We always promote slower travel. You know, really, really connect with the scenery, not just the scenery, but the culture, the land, everything around you without this rat race, without tour buses screaming by and all these things. So,
and it's safe and very English speaking, and it's just expensive. That's the only downside. Very,
right, right. It's expensive, but it's different. And it's authentic, right? It's not just that quote unquote tourist trap that you're going to find in major cities in Italy. Like you said, everybody goes to Italy. But that's the problem. Everybody goes to Italy.
Right.
We're seeing a lot of people. Germany is really growing for us. A lot of people, a lot of new interest in Germany. And of course, Portugal. Portugal is rising. Yeah. Portugal is known for being much less expensive. I would say even, I don't ever use the word cheap, but you know,
that's changing though, right? I mean, it's been found out. I mean, the prices have been going up, certainly for housing. I'm talking to enough expats here that they're saying, you know, it's been found out. But still, yeah, it's not going to hurt you as much as, like, say, the coast of France or something like that would get you.
No. No. And I think when we launched Croatia last year, we're doing pretty well in Croatia, but it's new for us. Slovenia was the next. Keep an eye on it over the next 3 to 5 years. It is going to explode. The Balkans area is going to really, really explode. So I think one of the things about Slovenia and the Balkans, you know, when you talk about Serbia, Albania, Bosnia, it has kind of a negative perception. And so when we launch a destination, we always want it to deem it safe, accessible, and desirable. Desirable being that it's something that is trending up and that there's demand for it from the US. Safe, is it actually safe? Because there's a lot of countries that are perceived as maybe unsafe or just has a perception. Take Albania. What do you know about Albania?
Well, I mean, I'm looking right past my computer here on my bulletin board is my bucket list for countries, and I have it blocked off. I've sectioned by continent. And for Europe, which I've seen most of, I've been to Albania, Bulgaria, and Georgia are all on there. And only thing I know about Albania, I know it's like, it's where the old Soviet Union used to go for where they wanted a beach. And everybody thinks it's I heard it's an amazing coastline with a lot of great islands and beaches, but, you know, a lot of Russian mobsters.
Exactly. So when you hear Albania, that's the image. And it's a very safe country. And we talk about, in California, in Boston, you can find dangerous areas. Find, you know, there's every country, every city is going to have a bad block, a bad district, or a bad area. But we're trying to, I think that whole region is the negative kind of connotation around it and perception is going to start to fall. And that's going to come with more travelers. And of course, it's going to go on social media and just that perception will change over time. Slovenia doesn't have, they're kind of neutral, right? Nobody really knows a lot about it. And then you look it up and it's absolutely gorgeous. It borders Italy and Croatia, and which are safe countries already. The only downside about Slovenia is the access part. So you've got to fly into Italy. There's no real great access directly into Slovenia. So you can fly into Croatia and come up. Go north, or you can go into Italy and go east. You can go fly into Prague and go south.
Yeah. I mean, the safety aspect, I don't want to, like, just because I've traveled enough that I know that, most countries, certainly most countries in Europe, are statistically safer than the U.S. So I don't, I don't have that fear. I know a lot of, like, people who don't travel as much, they have that fear. And they're operating off, still some Cold War ideas of what's going to happen in there. And then there's visa issues that you got to work around. And you you know, that's a whole different thing. But I will say, yeah, you know, there's old Europe, you know, which they, you know, your Spain, Italy, you know, France and those kind of places and Germany. That and but this new, I do find that in Eastern Europe, at least amongst the young people, they are kind of, there is a positive kind of energy, like looking forward to the future, as opposed to like, you know, if you poll a million, you know, and they have polled, you know, French youngsters, people under 30, and they don't, they're all convinced that they're not going to have it as good as their parents. They're not happy with the direction of the, you know, it's a real negative, but, and the unemployment is high. So they're not really, you know, there's not that positivity that you see, you know, that I would see like in Croatia or in Eastern Europe, former these countries where they are aware that, you know, their parents had it pretty bad. And so they're actually kind of looking forward. You know, there is an energy there that, you know, that, that you don't find in Eastern or Western Europe. Do you find that?
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's a slippery slope because once the tourism really, you know, gets to a level where it's boosting their economy, that's when you have to be careful.
Yeah.
There's backlash of over-tourism, rising rates. It becomes, you know, undesirable because it gets too expensive. You know, there is a limited supply in these rising destinations. Even in Ireland, they can't build hotels fast enough. So the rates in Ireland are just, they're beyond a level that we ever comprehended 15 years ago. And it's starting to stifle demand a little bit because the hotels are getting a little comfortable with their occupancy rates. So, you know, I think it can overwhelm a destination when something trends up too fast.
Oh, yeah. We went to Iceland a couple of years ago. And you know, I had to get a ship in Reykjavik. And we went a week early just to explore because I hadn't been before. But yeah, they just, I mean, it is, people forget it is a small island. And people, mm-hmm. especially during the summer months when it's peak, they just don't have the infrastructure into whether it's hotel rooms or even like enough bathrooms along the main roads to, for people to use, you know? So it just, you know, there's only some places you just so get angry that people were, you know, pulling over to the side of the road to pee because there are no bathrooms and you got to be careful. You know, I rented a car there and you're just like, okay, when's the next gas station? Oh, it's pretty far away. There's not like an exit every few miles, you know? So yeah, they are dealing with it. You could price yourself out of it.
Iceland's a great, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's a way to keep the crowds down is you just keep raising prices until, you know, it's manageable, but they don't have the problem like, say, Dubrovnik has in Croatia with the cruise ships, which can, you know, five a day could come into that place and just overwhelm downtown and you can't even move. So yeah. One good thing about COVID is that, you know, some of these countries and cities have started to put their foot down and going, oh, you know, we needed that break. And, you know, they're starting to limit it. I know Venice started to limit the ships a little bit and Barcelona as well, because it was just too much. It was just too much during the day.
I often talk about how the aftermath of COVID or really just pre-COVID when the over-tourism really started to take hold. And in COVID, I think also allowed the countries to take a step back, the cities to implement city taxes and take steps to reduce the amount of traffic because it leads to an undesirable experience for a lot of other travelers. I mean, myself included, I would never go to any cruise port. It's not appealing to me, Mike. I don't like crowds. I don't like to be overwhelmed with people, and neither do the locals, as you've seen in Barcelona, who fought back.
But do you, when people come to you and they say, I want to go to Italy and stuff like that, and I had a friend who just went for the first time, which I was amazed. I can't believe it was his first time to Italy. But of course, they did the standard Rome, Florence, Venice, you know, triangle that everybody, I guess, does in their first time. But he didn't love it as much as I thought he would. And I think it was because of the crowds and because he went during the summer and the peak seasons. And I had to convince him. It's like, no, you got to come back and we got to do it a different way. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I would have asked you, or I wish you would have asked me, and I would have like tried to send you to somewhere else. But when people who don't know better, they come to you, and I know you want to avoid the over tourism. Do you steer people in a different way? But they say, no, we got to go see Paris. We got to go see the Eiffel Tower. You know, just how do you go? I know you want to see it, but can I steer you this way?
It's a balancing act, because people do want to see the popular sites, sure, right? And we don't want to steer them completely away, but we want to educate them and really let them know that they're, it's not, let's take Dublin for, I'm going to go back to Ireland just because it's,
okay.
Dublin is not the Ireland you go to see.
No.
Right?
No.
The Ireland you go to see is, I love Dublin, but it's beyond Dublin. So when people associate Ireland and Dublin, you go, Dublin's a two-night city. There's a lot to do. And then you do the Guinness Storehouse. You do the, you know, all the sites.
King,
and
the college there. You see the Book of Kells, yeah, and the Oscar Wilde statue. And then you move on.
Sounds like you've been a number of times.
Oh,
you
know, yeah.
And then you move on. Rome. Let's take Rome. I took my family to on a trip that went from Paris down to Lucerne, Switzerland, and then into Lake Como, and then down to Rome. And to me, like, number one, I couldn't wait for them to see Lake Como. I love Lake Como. They didn't like it because they came from Switzerland. So they were spoiled with
lakes and mountains. Yeah, they've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, pristine, right? Just as clean as can be, and no crowds. Lake Como is not overcrowded whatsoever, but
compared to these remote Swiss lakes, it is crowded. Yeah,
it is crowded. There's, you know, God forbid, there's construction going on in the roads. Right. They got to Rome and they couldn't get out of there fast enough. And this is not like Rome. There are places in Rome, and I think it's a two day visit. But the problem with Rome is that it's a city. If you don't know, it's a real city. You have to.
It's big.
And be educated.
It's loud. It's crowded. Yeah.
There's graffiti. There's characters.
It's a nice way. Nice way to put it.
There's a lot to see and do in Rome. But even for me, the first time I went to Rome, and at night you had all the street vendors trying to sell little toys that shot up in the air, and it felt like a circus. And for that, I was like, this is great. You got to see the Colosseum. You got to see all the sites that you came to see, but then you got to get out of there and go do something a little bit more off the beaten path, a little bit more authentic. And, you know, again, kind of slow down and take it all in rather than checking boxes, as you say.
Isn't that the hardest thing? I mean, as I get older, and I've been spoiled by the fact that I have seen a lot of places and I've gone a lot of places and I've traveled a lot, but it's a combination of just being older and moving slower, but I do travel slower now. I mean, when you're young, it's just like, we got to hit 5 countries in 5 days. And it's like, no, now you just gotta, let's find a cool place.
Yeah.
Check it out, you know, get in with the pace, and maybe, you know, God forbid, meet some locals, you know, that we could maybe get the feel of a place. But that's, I guess it's a hard sell. You're also trying to make money, and people are coming to you and go, look, well, we got, you know, 2 weeks in Europe and we want to see as much as possible. You don't want to talk them out of it. But then again, you don't want to, you know, how do you balance that?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we can make money by, I mean, I always say there's two things we sell, time and experience, right? And expertise. Anybody can, and especially with AI tools now, you can get an itinerary that you think you want to travel on. They're always really aggressive, by the way. I love ChatGPT, but if you ask for an itinerary, they're nearly impossible to actually execute. So for us, it's about, you know, again, looking at us as the experts and trusting us as the ones who have experienced all this firsthand, and relying on us to send you in the right direction where you're going to be satisfied that you came to see what you thought you wanted to see, but also had an experience that where you connected with the destination and the people in a way that you never expected. And that you can't get from the rat race of seeing all of Rome and just checking off boxes again. getting out to the countryside, getting into the small town, sitting in a pub, talking to the locals, that's what really connects you and changes you, right? And for you, you've traveled all over the place and you talked about traveling with confidence. I think that for us, there's two different people that we appeal to. One is the person who doesn't have that confidence to do it themselves, and they rely on us to kind of guide them. The other side is completely opposite. They're the well-traveled folks like you that could put together your own trip, and you just don't want to because you value a one-stop shop. Say, do it all for me. This is where I want to go. You pick the hotels. You get the transfers. You get everything. Put it all together for me because I just don't have the time to do it. And that's where the two kind of aspects come together.
Well, I've talked to a number of travel agents and people with tour companies and things like that. And of course, the big fear is, and everybody thought, you know, with the advent of the internet and everything else, they wouldn't need travel agents anymore, right? You said, you know, you're out of the airline booking business, which I totally understand. But that, you know, you haven't gone away. And in some cases, you know, business even went up. And that flies in the face of the tech guys who say, well, you don't need any of these people anymore. So what is it that you're offering that I can't find myself? You know, I you know, you think you can find anything now, especially you brought up AI. I
mean, yeah.
What is you, when people say, well, I could just do this myself, what do you say?
I mean, there's two things that come to mind right away. Is one, just bringing the human touch into it, into the planning aspect, is you can't replace that with AI or any kind of technology. And that goes from, again, firsthand experience. You know, we send our team to these destinations. We stay in the hotels. We take the cooking class. We kayak down the river. We experience all the tours ourselves. We can't do everything, but we do enough to know that to be able to present ourselves as experts. And we have 30,000 travelers that have experienced everything else on our behalf, right? Who can come back and attest to their experience. I think the other part of it is I think the average trip is 10 nights and it has 27 different components to it. And that is from your airport transfer to every hotel, to every tour, to every attraction, to your travel insurance. So you take those 27 different components and you think that's 27 different things you have to research, trust, book, pay in different terms, pay in different currency, be subject to different, you know, cancellation and refunds if that came to it. Or you could just, we do it all because this is what we do every single day, right? So I would never go to, you know, a specialist shop and pretend that I know more than them, or, you know, because I saw it on the internet and ChatGPT kind of coached me through how to rewire, you know, my motorcycle. I'm going to take it to the shop every time because this is what they do every day.
Right. But if you, you say you have all these, you know, you work with plenty of tour guides, I'm sure, and tour companies on the ground. But do you also create your own? I mean, have you built some from scratch or have just gone to like established operators and said, okay, we're going to recommend these guys? Or have you also built these tours of your own on the ground?
We wouldn't say we built our own tours. We work with trusted suppliers directly. Like Ireland and the UK, we work with every single supplier directly. Every hotel, every tour, every attraction. And because everything's personalized and tailor-made, we put all of those together into one package, which becomes your tour. Everywhere else, if you're familiar with DMCs, which is a destination management company that contracts all of those suppliers on our behalf, they only work with tour operators. And so there's a lot of trust that we put with them. And they have their own preferred relationships, and anything that we don't know, they certainly do. So we don't operate bus tours. We don't operate anything that's scheduled. Everything is tailor-made. So the one exception to that, Mike, is a quick plug into our motorcycle tour company. Those are our own tours, our own motorcycles. We have a depot in Dublin. It's called Lemon Rock. And that's cool because that is our first dip into, that's our own. Now we're a supplier in Ireland as well as a tour offers. So, you know, it's pretty cool that we did create our own tours in that sense and rentals and that.
And now you're actually fixing motorcycles. Now you got to fix it.
Well,
you got to maintain a fleet now.
Again, I leave that to the mechanics. I don't pretend to do that myself, you know.
Have you, like, about you personally, have you done, like, what was the longest motorcycle trip you've taken? Where was that?
The longest I've taken in my life was probably across Canada. We ride with this group called the CEO Ride every year. We do a different place in North America. The longest solo ride I did was this summer in Ireland. I selfishly bought this new BMW imported from Lithuania. And I wanted to ride the northern half of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And it was my first real solo journey on a bike. Which is so cool because I think that you just travel differently when you're by yourself and you travel differently when you're on a motorcycle and you combine those and riders know there's no better sense of freedom and independence than riding a motorcycle by yourself.
How about the, is the new route there? Sorry, the dog is barking. Hopefully that one not coming through, but the, there's the Wild Atlantic Way or something that there's a new road there that, I don't know, not new anymore, but I remember when I was there, that was like they were really plugging that route.
It is changed. I think they did a fantastic job of not just defining that coastal road as a marketable route, but just in terms of making it its own destination almost. That's 90% of where our motorcycle tours go is along the Wild Atlantic Way. And you say new, and it was funny because I think it was a year ago, maybe even 2 years ago, they just celebrated the 10-year anniversary.
Oh, geez. Okay. Now I'm showing my age here. Okay.
But that's how fast time flies, Mike. It's just like you blink and all of a sudden you go, I feel like this is new.
Well, you know what? That makes sense because my mom just turned 90. And I took her to Ireland for her 80th. So yeah, that would make sense. It was 10 years because the signs for it were everywhere. And it just seemed like something that they built purposely for road trips, you know, for motorcycles
exactly.
And people take car rides, which is a great idea because I've always recommended, not that I do what you do, but when people ask me about Ireland, I say it's a very doable country in a week, you know, 7 to 10 days. I just flew in, rented a car, drove my ram around Ireland and we even made up to north and we went to the Giant's Causeway and Belfast and all that. And then again, finished for a couple of days down in Dublin. And I think that's a very good way to do it. You know, you get to see a lot. She didn't have to do a ton of walking, which, you know, at the time was tough for her. So yeah, I mean, I always recommend if they can handle driving on the other side of the road, do it and handle roundabouts.
That's a lot of roundabouts. Which are really fun on a bike, by the way, because you can, if there's light on traffic, you can just kind of, like, those roundabouts are fun. But I think that it comes down to, again, personal style of travel, how much windshield time you really want to put in. We would never personally recommend trying to do the whole country of Ireland in 7 or 10 days because you're just driving nonstop.
Well, when I say the whole country, I mean, we didn't get to see everything we wanted, but I mean, it's all a lot.
It's amazing. Ireland being the size of the state of Maine, you'd think that you'd be able to do it in a week. And there's so much to see.
There is a lot. There is a lot. And, you know, her family was from there. So we got to see places where, you know, that they came from and stuff like that. And I'm not saying she wasn't tired by the end of it, but
I'm sure.
Yeah. Don't take your 80-year-old mother on the Guinness tour, before noon, which is something that I did. She was not prepared to drink a beer at 11 in the morning.
She's a lightweight. Imagine her at 91.
Now forget it. So I know you seem like a big motorcycle rider. What they scare me. Have you gotten into any big accidents? And have you gotten into an accident overseas? Have you ever gone to a foreign hospital or anything like that?
Fortunately, I have not. I did have a I've had a couple of good scares, I did crash on the tail of the dragon down in
North Carolina.
North Carolina, yeah. The first time we've done it a couple of times. The first time I crashed, and it's one of those that you don't want to tell anybody. Like the guys that I was with, it's even on video. It's kind of funny because it wasn't a bad crash. There's 318 turns in 11 miles, I think, and I made 317 of them. It definitely makes you nervous when you get back on the bike, but you get over it. You just don't want your family to hear about it because then they get nervous every time you get back on the bike.
Right.
Overseas, you know, since we've been operating Lemon Rock for, this is going into our third year. So we've had two full seasons and we've had a couple of incidents, but they're funny enough. When they're not moving. The first accident we had, which was not an accident, it was just an injury. The guy stopped at a toll booth and put his foot down wrong and broke his leg. I don't know how that happened. there's been a couple of little fender benders, but obviously there's an inherent risk to riding motorcycles. And fortunately, again, I haven't been involved in anything that's kept me off of the bike again.
Good. I'm knocking on wood right here.
Please do. Yeah.
Well, I have a friend who lives not far from the Tail of the Dragon there, and he's a big motorcycle rider. I'm convinced that's one of the reasons why he moved down there from Chicago. but I'll ask this question for him. If he wants to do Ireland and say he wants to do the bike tour that you promote, what's the typical time length he would need? And throw out a ballpark number of like what that would be for him.
Yeah, it's funny. We just had a good strategy session yesterday and we're revamping our published tours right now, just refining them a little bit. So the most popular is probably our 11-day Wild Atlantic Way. So this is the only, so Lemon Rock does have preset itineraries because it's always going to be the same places you want to ride and the same roads, right? So we curate all the routes and pre-program them into GPSs. And so we do put together pre-packaged tours for Lemon Rock. We don't do that for Tenon, where we customize every single itinerary. But the Wild Atlantic Way is the most popular route, and that covers the Southwest Ring of Kerry, Dingle Peninsula, Barra Peninsula, up the coast, Cliffs of Moher, through Connemara. It's just, it is fantastic riding. For that, we have our own BMW bikes. We can arrange the routes, the accommodations, and everything in between. It's about $5,000 per person if you're going in a shared accommodation. So if you have two bikes, one room, it's about $5,000 per person for an 11-day. Now, that's not 11 days of riding. That is, you come in, we never let you pick up a bike up on your day of arrival after flying overseas, or overnight, rather, because it's just, I did that, my wife and I, the first time we rode in Ireland.
It's exhausting.
You always underestimate your jet lag and how exhausted you are. And so we picked up the bike. This was 2017. Our daughter was on the summer broad program over there. Picked up the bike and rode from Dublin to Galway. She's fallen asleep on the back. Her helmet's hitting my helmet. I'm so tired. I'm doing a 107 miles an hour as fast as I can go to get to Galway. And then it starts to rain. I'm like, I just want to sleep. It was so dangerous. No. It was not ideal, Mike. And this is where when we said, not just for liability, but for true, you don't want to ride on the day of arrival. And everybody thinks they're going to be fresh enough to do so. We don't allow you to do it. So you come in and you acclimate, you stay nearby.
Spend a couple days in Dublin, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we had that. So we intentionally put you north of Dublin in this nice hotels and cute towns that are not in Dublin.
Okay.
And we saved Dublin for the end. And there's a reason for that because, again, you got to be fresh. So if you go to Dublin before, depending on who you are, you might get a little wild. You might stay out a little bit too late. And things are timed, right? So the guys in the depot, there's a pickup time that you kind of need to adhere to.
Yeah.
So all of our tours on like an 11-day, you're really riding for 8 because then you drop your bike off and you go party in Dublin for the last 2 nights.
That makes sense to me. I mean, so another question for my buddy who Are they allowed to do it alone? Like with, you just give them the map and the itinerary, or is there a guide that they ride with?
It's most of them are self-guided. As long as you have the routes in the GPS, and everything's pre-booked, it's very easy to get around and follow follow the map. And then we're always on the, we're available. We have 24/7 support and service. And, if anything ever goes haywire, the guiding, a lot of people are interested in personal guides. When you start to consider the cost of their bike, their time, their accommodations, it adds up rather quickly.
Yeah. How many people get speeding tickets?
None.
Oh,
there's
my God.
There's no cops in Ireland. I shouldn't say that, but there are.
it's out. You said it.
Yeah. There are speed cameras and this is the thing about Europe. There's speed cameras and they always forewarn you. And they say speed camera ahead. Like it's, they're not interested in spending their time pulling over people for speeding, I guess. And it's weird, but no, there's no cops anywhere. I've never seen a cop on the road between cities. Like, and you rarely see him in the cities. It's wild.
I always wonder about anybody who has some kind of travel agency or tour agency, the biggest pain in the ass that people are about what's their thing. And I would think it would, I don't know how deep in the woods you get about food and restaurants, but people are so particular and so hard to please when it comes to that and dietary restrictions and crap like that. That and hotels, people are just very particular about. I mean, are those the bulk of the complaints? And how deep do you get in food? Or do you even bother just say, look, go to this area for restaurants? We'll throw a couple names of restaurants at you and you pick yourself, or how does that work?
Yeah, we actually do a lot of recommendations and reservations for travelers based on just the restaurants we know or get good reviews from our own travelers. We don't get a lot of complaints about it, though, because I think people are pretty savvy in terms of knowing that, hey, this is a good restaurant. Maybe it's a bad meal. You know, I think there's a different standard over there. And depending on what you're looking for, I've had a bad meal at a great restaurant. I've had a great meal at a bad restaurant.
Right.
So but we don't get complaints. I think our team, the complaints we get, I'll tell you straight up, no air conditioning.
Oh,
and
sure. Yeah.
Because it's not something
America
they're
is
used
very
to.
Air conditioned. Overly air conditioned, many would say.
Overly air conditioned, and Europe is heating up at a pace that I don't think they're prepared for. The summer months in Italy, I mean, you're 90 degrees and you're stuck in a hotel room without air conditioning, and we have a minimum 4-star standard. So there, it's not an accommodation. It's not the selection; it's just the standard, and they're starting in their 1,000-year-old buildings, right? Possibly rework the ductwork to get AC and all these.
I've been in London during a heat wave, and they are not prepared for it. You know, it's really bad. I mean, you have to go outside and just sit outside because the you can't be indoors. It's just so stuffy and hot. I mean, it's bad. And like you said, they're not ready. I mean, and also you don't want to. If you go to Rome in the middle of summer, it's all, you know, especially in August, there's none of the locals are there. They're all at the sea somewhere. So
right.
I guess you got to tell them that and go, look, don't be surprised if it's just you and a bunch of Germans walking around. I guess that's got to be tough.
I think the other part, like when it comes back to hotels and the expectations, I always laugh at the surveys we get. The post-travel surveys, there are so many people who focus on the bathrooms of their room.
Oh,
the size of the bathroom, the angles of the ceiling, whether or not the sink still has a separate cold and hot faucet, yeah. And they their head explodes. Like, how am I supposed to work this sink? Because I either my hands are too cold or too hot, and I have to keep switching them.
Yeah. For me, it's
showers.
Oh my God. Like when I go to the hotels.com, like the reviews or something like that, it just 90% of them, at least from Americans, are about the breakfast. It's like, I don't give a damn about the breakfast. It's like, the breakfast is, first of all, breakfast around the world is not a big deal. You know, a continental breakfast, you get your coffee and a roll and maybe that's it.
you know, and they were like, well, you know, the coffee was not as good and I couldn't get, all they had was this. It's like, yeah, it's breakfast, man. Move on. Eat, get a juice, get a coffee and leave. It just,
it's always included, right?
Right.
So I think this goes back to, though, if at the start of your trip, you have a great breakfast at your first hotel.
It ruins
and then
it.
And then you get to the second hotel and you're met with a few pastries and some warm orange juice and you go, you know, this, I'm going to write about this, right?
Yeah.
So, but the people who are big on breakfast stick with the breakfast. The people who are big on the showers and water pressure, they'll talk about the water pressure in every single hotel they stayed at. And you're like, this person really valued water pressure.
They really love the water pressure. That's funny.
Yes.
So where do you see a trend going? And you've had to reposition your business a couple times. I know you have a lot of competition out there, but do you see a trend in people traveling now that you're really going to, you're thinking, oh, this is going to be something we're going to be focusing on in the next 10, 20 years. I mean, whether it's locations or whether it's a type of travel, what do you see happening?
Fortunately for us, Mike, is that we've been doing it since the beginning, and you're seeing more companies leaning into the tailor-made, personalized journeys. And because we've had such about a 19-year head start on it, you know, we're going to continue to elevate the experience, and which will make it more luxury, higher end, more expensive. And we're okay with that. We don't pride ourselves on the number of travelers that we fulfill their trips. We pride ourselves on the experience that they have. And I would much rather have less. It's the old Jerry Maguire motto, right? Less travelers, higher service. So it's something that we're going to continue to lean into, more unique experiences, slower travel, slower and more intentional. I think that's what it comes down to.
I'm going to put you on the hot seat here. Most overrated tourist attraction in Europe.
The most overrated tourist attraction in Europe, in all of Europe.
Well, the
attraction, not city. You're talking about
any attraction. It could be a site. It could be a city. It could be, you know, somewhere you just, when they say they want to go, you just roll your eyes and just, oh boy.
It's funny.
We can narrow it down. We could pick Italy. Why don't we just pick Italy? Most overrated.
I mean, Spanish Steps.
Okay.
I mean, I don't get it.
It's stairway in the middle.
And there are thousands of people. They don't even know what. I mean, I don't know the history of the Spanish Steps. I don't know why they're so popular. It's just what people go and see and do, right?
Okay.
And here in the U.S., I always compare it to the wings. You know, the picture of the wings in Nashville. Against the wall, and they all everybody stands and they just have the wings, and they stand there for 2 hours to get a picture of them with these painted wings on the wall. For what? So they can post one picture on Instagram.
They're in every city too. There's a building in every city that has a big pair of wings on it. There's a 7-Eleven here in Venice Beach that has one.
you can save 2 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. And get a Slurpee while you're there. How about the most overrated in England and the UK?
In the UK, where would I say the most overrated? You know, I'm gonna spin this in a way, Mike, that not.
I know this only is your because, business. You don't want. This is unfair.
And here's the truth. And when I first started this business, I stayed away from anything that was popular because I had this perception that it was just a tourist trap. I'm going to say the Blarney Castle in Ireland is a perfect example.
I knew you were going to say that about Ireland, right? The Blarney Castle.
So I said to myself before I'd been there, I said, Blarney Castle is just like, we're just going to skip it. You're not, who wants to go stand in line to kiss the Blarney Stone? And there's, you know, the
million
rumors
other lists
about,
have been on
you know,
it.
The
locals.
That's right.
On
that's
it.
Right. The low, exactly. The locals pee on it. Why would you want to do this? So I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is an awful experience. And one, this is exactly what, you know, that the heart and soul of Tenon is going to be, is you're going to skip the Blarney Castle and you're going to go to a more authentic experience in a small town and sit in a pub and talk to the locals. And then I went to the Blarney Castle, and the key to this was it was 9 a.m. when it first opened.
Before the buses really started to arrive.
It's beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. the climb up to the Blarney Stone is cool. The grounds are cool. And I thought, man, I was wrong. This is like, there is a reason these places are popular. And then we left. And as we left, I think all the tour buses from a cruise,
right,
that was down in Cork, came in, and there were hundreds of people lining up just to get into the grounds. And they all had, they're all branded. They had these stickers. Numbered.
Different colored stickers, sure.
Yeah, yep. You had the guys with the umbrellas. And I said, okay, it's not the attraction or the tour that turns me off. It's the system and this type of tour. Because I don't want to be led like sheep in and around the country at all. So it wasn't Blarney Castle that I was mad at. It was the mass tourism and the coach buses and the cruise ships that I was mad at.
Yeah, I've said that about Dubrovnik as well. I've been there overnight and stayed there a few days. And it's like once the sun goes down and everybody goes back to their ships or whatever and leaves, walking around this old city is at night is beautiful. It's great. But during the day, it's just unmanageable. You know, it's just too crowded. But then, you know, it's very romantic at night. It's lit up, you know, it's cobblestone streets and this old kind of castle village. And it's great. But yeah, people ruin everything, don't they? Let's be people.
That's what it comes down to.
Everything. They really do. So, I mean, when you want to go on holiday and, you know, I know Europe is your business. So do you ever want to be like, screw this, I'm going to Asia. You're like, you know, what gives you a break?
It's a question I ask myself a lot because there's still so much of Europe that I want to see. And because it's our business, it makes it very easy. And obviously, you know,
being the owner of
a tour operator. Honestly, most people, like, I don't pay for a lot when I travel.
Right. They roll out the red carpet for you.
They do. And you get a little spoiled. I've always wanted to go to New Zealand. You know, experience more of the adventure side of things. Now that I'm getting older, though, like my ambition for doing the world's highest bungee jump and all that is waning a little bit. But there's a lot to see and do in Europe. But I will say that where I escaped to is in our own backyard, and that's the West, where you are, but like the mountains of the Rockies,
Utah, all those places. Beautiful.
Every time we go or anytime there's someplace new, I'm going, look what's right in quote unquote our backyard. So that's kind of where I go. You know, there's a strong desire to go to South America. It's so easy and part of it's ingrained in my DNA to just go to Europe and keep experiencing new places in Europe. And it really is what is attractive to me. And this goes back to the sites, the overrated sites. Even in London, the first time I went to London, which was my first time to Europe, I was in awe. It was everything I saw was just so new and so cool and so old and so different. And it went beyond, you know, what you were seeing, but what you were feeling, because you're walking down these streets and people are outside having pints of beer. Right. They're just in the road and you're not used to that. I remember eating lunch and we were at a table and two locals came and sat at the same table we were having lunch. And they were like with MI6. What's their equivalent to the CIA over there?
Oh, the Scotland Yard, or were they with the CIA? Oh, MI6. I don't know.
They're government officials and their system was down or something. And these two guys sat down and we spent the rest of the day and night with these guys pub crawling. We're behind the bar at this pub. We're doing shots. We're pouring drinks. We're getting pictures. And they became our buddies for the rest of the night. And that to me was such a shift in going to places that are inviting and hospitable and new and welcoming. Those are the places I want to go. And I'll continue to keep going back to Europe as long as I keep having those experiences. And And so there's still a lot of that I want to see and do.
Well, what's it, what's up top? What's left for you? I mean, is it more Eastern? Is it more the Eastern countries?
Greece. My wife and I are big we really want to go to Greece. Yeah, we haven't been there. And I really, really want to go to Norway. I want to ride a motorcycle through Scandinavia
and all that stuff.
Yeah. That to me is highly appealing. I think those are the two that are next. My daughter's graduating high school this summer. My wife is taking her and her friend and their daughters to, they're going Paris up to Brussels, down to through Germany and ending in Switzerland. And so they're going to be more well-traveled than I am. My daughter, who is 18, is, I think she's checking off her 11th country this summer. Wow. So I'm a little envious. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, do you find Brussels? Okay. I'm going to say it right now. Big hot take. Brussels is a little boring. My sister was going through there. She, they're flying into next month, actually, her and her husband. They're going to, for the first time, Amsterdam. And they were going to fly out of, I think they're flying out of Brussels, but I told them Brussels, no, they're flying into Brussels and out of Amsterdam. And they were going to stay for a few days in Brussels. I was like, man, go to Bruges or Ghent, because Brussels, I don't get it. I mean, it's a city, it's fine, but you see a statue of a kid pissing and that's it. You eat some fries. I don't know what did I miss something there? What's going on in Brussels?
You missed is access, right? So they're taking the train from Paris. So so what we're doing for them is they're going from Paris up to Brussels. It's just easy to stay in Brussels, and then we got a private driver for them to go up to Bruges and Ghent for the day and experience that. But to get them from Paris up to Brussels, Brussels to Bruges. Stay there, then get them back to the train in Brussels to get the train down to. So it's just, I think it's logistically
easier to get somewhere else.
exactly.
She wanted to stay a few days there. I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
No. There's some cooler places to see over there if you've never been.
And this is where I will, kind of plug the private driver experience. And it's expensive, but it's, you get a private driver who knows the area, knows the roads. You're not trying to figure it out yourself, that you're on your own time. And if it's you and me, we can have some pints, not worry about driving and still see the local area without trying to navigate it ourselves.
Yeah. And the biggest thing is being on your own time, like you said, and not having to worry about the train schedules and everything else. And some people just don't want to lug their crap through a train station. That's the other thing. When you say you get a car, what kind of car are we talking? If we want to hire a driver,
I mean, that's usually a Mercedes. It's a Mercedes, premium Mercedes S class, usually. S or E? What's a more like? I still get in cars
wrong
over there.
Dude, man, you are. I have no idea. I'm sure it's nice.
They're very nice. I think, when my wife goes, there's seven of them, three, four, six of them. So they'll get a Sprinter van, a 9-passenger van that's comfortable.
Oh, this will be a great trip.
It will.
I'm surprised you haven't been to Greece. So I think when you're in Athens, you're going to get Rome vibes, and the fact that you 2 days is enough.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then get out to the islands. That's my recommendation. A couple nights in Athens is good. You see it, see all the sights, and then you move on. Get out to those islands.
Yeah, the islands are what's appealing. I'm not a big city guy, like you said. 2 nights and then you get out to the real Greece or the real XYZ destination.
Right. How about the craziest thing you've ever eaten or drank on the road in another country?
Iceland has some really interesting food.
And it's whale or something? Food. Did you eat?
I ate a muffin. People are going to hate that. Yeah, they're going to hate it. I probably had them somewhere in this episode, and then I just lost them. But I didn't kill the puffin, Mike. Like, the puffin was served there. To me.
I know.
Like, I'm not going to, I'm hardwired to try everything new once, and the puffin, it was with my daughters. It was for her 16th birthday, the night of her 16th birthday in Reykjavik. And I'm like, when in Rome, and I ate the puffin. It wasn't good.
Okay, good. Okay, that makes me not want to try it. Because we went to the island, was it Westman Island? Where's the island with all the puffins on it? Because we took the ferry.
They're off of Iceland?
Yeah. off of Iceland. It's East Westman Island or something. It's the largest puffin colony there. That
I know what you're talking about. I'm not 100% on the name of the island.
Yeah, I mean it's a long Icelandic name, but that's what it's known for. So we went to that colony, and it's pretty amazing to see them everywhere. But I didn't, and that's where they rescue them. The babies will fly off, and they'll drop to the ground, and then the locals go there and pick them up. And
grill
at night, no, they don't. They take them back to the up to the top of the mountain, and they throw them off the cliff. And that's where they learn to fly. And then they'll get because they have to make it to the ocean. So the ones that don't make it to the ocean, they go around and they pick them up. I mean, they'll literally land. They'll be distracted by the city lights, and they'll land in the middle of the town. And for a couple nights a year, all the locals, the kids and stuff, they all ride around on their bikes and they pick up all these little baby puffins in boxes, and they take them up to the cliff, and everybody throws them off the cliff.
I feel like there's a metaphor in there somewhere.
Right? And that's how they learn to, they save them, which is actually was a great story. But I'm not like you eating them.
Yeah.
What do you compare them to? Like, what do they taste like?
I mean, just like a
not
wretched pigeon. Like, I mean, whatever you would think, a beaten up homeless pigeon in the alley would taste like. That's they definitely don't taste as cute as they look.
Yeah, there's a reason I didn't see them on a lot of menus, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the there's not a lot of, I mean, other than like deer, right? That they're both cute and taste good. It's usually just let them be the beautiful birds that they are. So I regret that. there's a place up in Scotland, up near Inverness, and I ordered my steak, and there was a tongue on top of the steak. It was a sheep's tongue.
Oh boy,
that was actually pretty good. I didn't like crave tongue after that, but I did eat the whole thing and enjoyed it. So. Don't say no to the tongue.
Yeah, I was in Inverness last year for the first time, and I rented a car. And I was speaking about the motorcycle riding. There was a car rally that was going up far up into Scotland, which I guess is pretty well known.
The NC500.
Is that it? Yeah. Have you done that?
The coastal road. No. But we were just mapping out four motorcycle tours yesterday. The problem with up that far north are just availability of accommodations. So you're usually staying in Inverness and doing day trips. You're doing like a clover leaf of like day one, day two, day three, that all kind of, come in and out of Inverness, unless you can book really early. It's kind of like the Isle of Skye. You have to be so far ahead to book anything in time.
You're right. Cause I had 4 days off, and I rented a car in Inverness. And I drove to the Isle of Skye, which takes, a couple hours to go there. And I just figured I would, I was stopping and seeing sights along the way. So it was a whole day thing. And I figured I was going to be pretty tired. I'll spend a night. I'll just find some place to stay out in the Isle of Skye. And no chance. There was no availability.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You found the bench in the park. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would turn around and drive all the way back to Inverness. I was beat by the end of that night, man. I was tired. But I was beautiful, but it was a long day. So yeah, book ahead, everyone, especially if you're in there like July and August when I was there.
For sure.
All right. Well, this is where you get your plugs in, and tell us where people can find you and how to book, and the website, socials, and everything.
Absolutely. It's hard to keep. I'm just going to ramble on all socials. Okay. I'm just kidding. So Tenon Tours is tenontours.com, and that's Tenon. So a lot of people say Tenon or Tenon, or it's just Tenon. Tenontours.com.
What's it named after?
Tenon, it's a great question, because there's a lot of thought put into this, and a lot of people don't ask the question, so you don't get to tell the story. my last name is Lewis. And my buddy, who was doing the council's the trip in the program in Ireland, his last name is Lewis as well. And we wanted to have a name that wasn't. We didn't want to do Lewis Tours, right? Because I think that's kind of an arrogant take. And we didn't want to do anything that pigeonholed us
into Ireland.
Yeah, it's not going to be Shamrock Tours or something.
Exactly. So we wanted a twist on the name Lewis, and Lewis as a material thing, a noun, is a connecting joint. So like it's a woodworking term, like tenon and mortise, right? It's actually there's little nubs on the top of Stonehenge, the pillars that are tenons, because they secure the horizontal slabs, right? So tenon as a connecting joint turned into a metaphor for connecting people to cultures through travel. Oh. So that is what that's the story behind the name tenon. So there is a meaning to it.
Okay. Yes. So are you tenon tours or just tenon on socials mostly?
We're tenon tours. So on Facebook, I think it's tenon fans. If you get to tenontours.com, you can find the socials in the footer. Instagram, I think, is /tenontours. And then Lemon Rock Motorcycle Tours, that website is ridelemonrock.com. So, okay. And then from there, again, we have links to the socials because nobody's going to remember if I just rattle them off. So tenontours.com and ridelemonrock.com.
Well, now we got to ask, why Lemon Rock for Ireland?
Great question. Nobody asked it. So the founders of Lemon Rock, because we acquired the business, they started the business down in Killarney in County Kerry. And if you know the Skellig Islands, most people know Skellig Michael is where Star Wars was filmed, where Luke Skywalker lived.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Right. So they're a big boost for the Skellig Islands. So there's three islands out there. There's Skellig Michael. There's, Little Skellig? And then what they refer to as Baby Skellig, but it's Lemon Rock. So the third rock, and they all line up in this perfect formation if you look it up. And the littlest little formation is called Lemon Rock.
Okay. And that's
and
what
they just grabbed it. That's okay. Yeah, they just said, let's, you know, thought it was cool and went with Lemon Rock. And I think it's got meaning. It's cool. I'll remember it now. That's right. Luke Skywalker lived next door.
Oh, good. Well, thank God. So the Force is with that island.
That's right.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, I appreciate you doing this, and thank you for spending time today. And so I will look for it next time. I'm actually definitely gonna appoint my buddy who rides the motorcycle your way. I mean, it sounds way up his alley to do that trip. You know, he's not a huge traveler, but He's someone who asks me for advice all the time, you know, and I'm like an idiot giving him all this free advice. I should have been doing what you're doing and charging people for this. But I appreciate it. 10 tours. Good luck with everything and congrats on the business. Thank you. Brian Lewis, everybody.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
I'm Pauline Frommer, and on the Frommer's Travel Show, we try to answer one important question. What's really worth knowing in travel today? From engaging destinations to ways to travel better, save more, and see deeper, and conversations with some of the smartest people in travel, from Samantha Brown to Andrew McCarthy, new episodes weekly on voyescape.com and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm David Brody, co-host of the Travel in 10 podcast. Together, myself and my co-host, Tim Johnson, have traveled to over 150 countries around the world and all 7 continents. Now we're sharing our favorite places, some of our best tips and experiences from all around the world in just 10 minutes on Travel in 10. Join us at voyescape.com.